So this week, Patrick, I am absolutely thrilled to welcome to the Talk On To Walk On podcast Liverpool actor John May. If you don't know John, please do look him up on @thatjohnmay on Instagram and look him up on YouTube. I defy you not to be laughing hysterically at his wonderful, lovable Liverpool characters, Turkey Teeth, Kenny and Karen Corona, Derek and Craig, and I'm sure there's more in there with more to come. I know you've been laughing endlessly this week when you've been watching them again in preparation for the podcast. I'm like, there is more to John, you know. So the man behind those fabulous characters is what I'm obviously interested in. John wears his heart on his sleeve. He's very transparent, and that's what drew me towards him in terms of bringing him on to the podcast. He's just completed an immense, grueling challenge, walking from Land's End to John O'Groats. It was to raise awareness for Weapons Down, Gloves Up. And he was joined unexpectedly by the father of the beautiful Elle Edwards, who was tragically and horrifically killed on Christmas Eve this past year gone. So it was incredibly poignant that Tim joined him. But when you watch the vlogs, it's beautiful to watch, to be honest. Not only are they very funny, they have moments of silence, they have moments of bonding, and despite the fact they didn't know each other before, they've created a beautiful friendship through this walking all these miles up to John O'Groats. So I'm excited to talk to John about that and the impact that that's had on him, as well as his history of being an entrepreneur, owning a Sweeps barbershop on County Road in Liverpool for 17 years, being an actor. His credits include Little Boy Blue, Time, Coronation Street, and I know there's more to come, but I know he's creating his own path going forward as well. So I'm looking forward to getting to know the man behind the wigs, even though I know you just want to have a laugh with him.
No, let's find out a little bit more about him. Let's see what keeps his fire in his belly. But yeah, absolutely fantastic. I'm looking forward to listening to him and having a bit of a laugh as well.
Do you think he's, are you a bit nervous? I am. I think he's going to like rip into us or something.
What about my southern accent? Well, I'll take it on the chin.
Yeah, I think you're going to have to. So let's talk on to walk on with John May and let's see where it leads. Honestly, just a little formal introduction. Welcome to the Talk On To Walk On podcast. Thank you for sparing the time to come on, because I think you're a bit busy, aren't you?
I'm busy now, yeah. I've just, since I get back off the walk, I mean, I've moved mountains, so I come back to a brand new fresh start. I come back to a clean slate, and lovely. I was like, so, you know, obviously I got rid of everything and stuff. And so, yeah, we have started a production company. It's all steam ahead. So it's very exciting.
Oh, I love that. I do want to dive in on about the walk, because that was actually what drew me to getting you on. Obviously, you're John May and you're incredibly popular. You were pointed out to me by my daughter's boyfriend, Jack. So I have to give him a shout out for that. But I had actually spotted the walk, and it was Jack that mentioned it. He said, oh, he's bloody funny as well, you know. And I knew that, but I was like, I want more. So tell us about why Land's End to John O'Groats, and then we'll talk about the other stuff that came before after that.
Why Land's End to John O'Groats? Okay, so am I ambitious? I just like a challenge. I haven't been diagnosed, but I'm pretty convinced I've got ADHD. And with ADHD, you always, it's all dopamine. It's all, you're always looking for that next hit of dopamine, right? So what I find what works for me, when you've got ADHD, you do something called hyperfocus. And when people, so you don't do things you're not interested in. It's a real struggle. It's called executive dysfunction. You just can't do it, but because it doesn't reward you. Like paying a parking fine or paying a credit card bill or something like that. So when you've got ADHD, you have this thing called hyperfocus. So what that is, that's a regular supply of dopamine. But by having that, you achieve. So yeah. I had a barbershop, which became really successful. I had a dog groomer that was successful. I was a marathon runner. I've been a bodybuilder. I was into falconry. I'm always doing something. Anyway, I got to a point where I felt I've achieved all these goals. And I was like, so my barbers were still there, and it was making me money, but I wasn't getting this I wasn't getting this buzz anymore, you know. So I decided to just get rid of everything. I thought, I'm going to get rid of everything and start again. I need a reset. I felt like I created a prison for myself. So I decided to sell my shop. And then it was going through and I thought, what am I going to do? And I thought, oh, I know what I'll do. And I went, bing, and I had one of these little moments of inspiration, these little moments where you can't choose a passion. A passion just comes along. And I've had many of them, and I thought, right, I'm going to walk from Land's End to John O'Groats. I think I had the idea when I was a kid, and I thought, it's something like something people like me don't do. You know, being from County Roads, being from a working class family, living a very samey life. So that's just the mentality you brought up with. And I thought, yeah, I'm gonna do this, you know, this challenge that most people can't conceive. So that was it. Yeah, and I decided to walk over 1,000 miles for a laugh. Mm-hmm.
But it gave you much more than a laugh, didn't it? And what I love about what you've just said there is we all think about doing these things and everything that you've listed, all your achievements, but you actually are incredibly focused, whether it's ADHD related or not. You actually do it, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. But I wanted to figure out why I do it.
Yeah.
Why I'll get an idea and I'll just get tunnel vision till I do it. And again, you know, I like to talk about ADHD because I think a lot of people they see it as a negative, but you can absolutely turn it into a positive. It comes with its struggles, so I want to champion it. I want to show people the positive side of it. But yeah, I just I love a challenge. A few years ago, I was about nearly 17 stone, and I walked into a gym and I said to the owner of the gym, it was like a bodybuilding gym. I said, I'd like to do a men's physique competition, get on stage with me little shorts on, all tanned up and whatever. And he looked me up and down and he said, you've got your work cut out. But 8 months later, I got an award off the Bodybuilding Federation. He said he'd never seen nothing like it at all. Yeah. So I achieved that. And I just like to have a bit of a challenge that, you know.
I've seen those pictures and the transformation is absolutely immense, unbelievable. Yeah. In terms of that, you just coming back to the before that, you ran marathons, didn't you, when you were younger? And then I read that you looked at yourself in this advert and just thought, I need.
Yeah, well, my brother asked me to do the London Marathon when I was about 21, and I wasn't very sporty in school. And I went, go ahead. Anyway, we entered, and I didn't realize there was a ballot system. It's like 1 in 200 get in, or maybe, you know, bigger numbers. Anyway, I got in, and he never got in, and I was like, all right. Do you know what I mean? Anyway, he done it for Roy Castle, the Roy Castle Foundation. And anyway, I ran it, and it took me 5 hours 33, which isn't a great time, to be honest with you, but it's like that was a really life-changing moment for me, because I thought, this kid who wasn't sporty, he used to pretend to forget his school, forget his PE kit, you know. And I'd ran a marathon, I thought, I can do anything. I've just ran a marathon. I've just achieved the unachievable. And because that's in my mind, it was unachievable. And within a year and a half, in a year and a half, I went from 5.5 hours to 3.5 hours. I knocked 2 hours off.
Yeah.
So it was just like, do you know what I mean? It was just like hyper-focus again. So I put that to bed. And then I opened Sweeps, me, and that was my passion for quite a long time.
Yeah, and those, that wonderful barbershop gave you, I think, did it help create these fabulous, lovable characters that are now a huge part of your life?
Absolutely. It's like I've cut thousands and thousands of heads, and it's like you start to see everyone at face value at first, and then over time you start to realize like there's people are built up of archetypes, they're built up of certain characteristics, and you'll find like you'll have groups of people and they're just all the same. They're like the different faces but got the same eyes, and it's like that's where the characters come from. So I just sort of, you know, just molded them together. But a lot of the characters did come from people in the barbers. And I think that's why they're so relatable to people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because they're just everyday people.
They are. And do some of them recognise themselves? Do any of them ever say to you, is that me?
Turkey Teeth's based on about three people. Okay. And then three people have come up to me and went, oh, that Turkey Teeth's funny, John. He said, you get divvies like that, don't you? Can't stand divvies like that, John. And little do they know, it was actually based on them.
I love that.
And I'm just laughing inside.
Brilliant. And I love the ignorance of it and the innocence of it, and in terms of what they can see, but they think he's absolutely hilarious. And he is absolutely hilarious. When I can understand him, I'm like that. I was laughing with, and again, you've got a great appeal to the young men, and which again I want to talk to you about. They just love it because they're laughing at themselves. It's a very Liverpool way, that, isn't it?
Well, I haven't done many, obviously I've been away for 4 months, but it's like I'm actually a Liverpool troll, really. I'm trolling Liverpool people, but because Liverpool, as you said, we laugh at ourselves, they absolutely find it hilarious. Like once I went to create a character from Formby. This character from Formby, and his name was Barlow. And like I started to sort of try and introduce him, and I got the height of abuse of people from Formby. Who do you think you are? And it's like, it just goes to show, you know what I mean? Like, people will just laugh at themselves. Everyone else can get defensive, you know?
Yeah, well, I could go South Liverpool and have a little go that way, because I reckon we'll definitely laugh at ourselves.
Yeah, definitely.
I often say to Patrick, you know what, if we were brave enough to do TikTok about our very privileged life compared to so many others, I think it could fly, but I don't think I'm quite brave enough, but maybe you could come up with something.
No, but even South Liverpool, it's like, if you put someone in front of me from Liverpool and they speak to me, I could tell you what part of Liverpool they were from. So yeah. It's like, Liverpool is, even though it's small, it's got so many different communities and, you know, it's quite varied, yeah.
Yeah, just coming back to the barbers as well. And then, you know, what part of the theme of the podcast is power of conversation, communication and all that. And I think I heard you say that it was actually a customer, because you've always loved acting as well. So, you know, and it was something that you wanted to do. But it was a customer that got you to audition for the Manchester Acting School. Is that right?
Yeah, there was a customer. This is a funny story, this now, because this same person walks past me in the street and pretends he doesn't know me. This customer persuaded me to go to these classes, but I just opened the barbers and I was like, oh, I haven't got time. But it's something I always fancied doing. But again, this working class mentality. And the reason why I do mention this a lot is because I would like to encourage people to break the thought, you know? And, anyway, it's something I always fancied doing, and I thought, I'll do it eventually. And then, but he actually signed me up at the school without me knowing, and I went, and I just fell in love with it. But I do find it quite funny that guy stopped going after about 3 weeks, and he only just wanted someone to go with. And then, he doesn't speak to me now. It's weird, bizarre.
That is bizarre, because that's obviously had a big impact on your life and actually going to the acting school. And I know I love what you're saying about working class mentality, and we need to actually, you know, get rid of those limitations. Cousin of mine, and you know, I know you know him, is Dave Kirby, and he's a big advocate for that, and he's a great example. He was actually my very first podcast guest.
I love Dave Kirby. Dave Kirby's always been a hero, man.
Yeah. Oh, thank you for that. And I know he'll love hearing that.
I've told him that to his face.
it's about that opening up the arts to everybody, isn't it? That it's for everyone, and to, you know, if that's what you want, to follow your dream, have a go. And you're a great example of that, John. And honestly, and I love the fact that you're now advocating it as well as showing it. You're actually shouting about it.
Yeah, that's it.
So fair play to you on that. So you went to acting school, and then you. All these commercials that you've managed to do and all the parts that you've had, has there been a highlight or has there been one that has made a big difference, or in terms of, obviously you've probably had to face rejection, that's been character building as well?
I mean, rejection's absolutely part of it. Like I'll give an example now, which is quite funny, and I've been buzzing off it all week. I went up for a job last week and I got recalled, and they come back with an email saying, they give me a very constructive email back, but the funny thing is about this. So where my offices are now, it's in the same building as a big production company, and this production, who who never gave me the job, rejected me. They're actually using our offices as their base. So I'm walking past them every day. It's just so funny. It's like, hold on, John. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, I just love it. But rejection most certainly is part of it. And I think, it's just part of it. And you just got to take it on the chin. And the only reason why you never got the job for it is because you weren't right for it.
Yeah.
And that's that. You can't take it personal.
Yeah. And I know what you've said, that it's about what the one thing though in the magic way, because you've done so many, and in the acting world, I know it's seen as highly regarded to get so many like commercial jobs and stuff like that, and it's quite lucrative as well, is that, you know, you actually turned a corner when you realised to just be yourself as opposed to trying
exactly.
to
be else. Tell that's you what, you, you've done your research, haven't you?
Like, lesson I have. Oh, you know what? Don't mess about me, you know.
No, well, I was here. It's like, I remember when I first started acting, and I remember certain people saying to you, well, you need to lose the accent, and so these were the messages I was getting. You know, it's like, oh, you know, and you'll get a lot of, but, like, say, maybe that you're a Scouser, or maybe this, and maybe that, maybe that. But who's going to do the Scouse roles? So what I realised was I was going to auditions. I went to about 20, and I was second-guessing what I thought this person wanted all the time. I was being a false version of me. And then I'm good friends with a casting director, and he said, for every part that you go for, especially commercials, because it's such a wide net, he said, for every part, that'll get put out to about 700 clients. Right? About 700 clients will apply via their agent or whatever. Right? And that'll get dwindled down. And I weren't getting none. And then I thought to myself, I'm just going to be me. There's no one better at being me than me. Otherwise, I'm a second-rate version of someone else. I know that's very cliche, but it's true. So when I had this moment, I thought, nah, I'll just be me. And I went in, and then I got four in a row. So yeah. I finished first. I have 700 people, four in a row. And I thought, right, I've clocked out. You do this. Do you know what I mean? And yeah, so I've done very well on commercials. 32 commercials I've done.
Brilliant.
So that's pretty good. And I've traveled the world with it as well. And I've been quite lucky to have visited places that I'd probably never thought of going.
Yeah, fantastic. Did you have a highlight?
What was the highlight? Well, my first ever job, actually. I was in Istanbul for 3 weeks, and I was a massive Phoenix Knights fan, still am. But I was with Rave On, Neil Fitzmaurice, and I shared the trailer with Kenny Dalglish, and I was like,
oh, wow. Yeah.
This is mad. But I've had jobs in the Andes. I've been filming in the Andes. I've been jobs in Argentina, South Africa, Cape Town, and yeah, it's been fantastic.
I love that. Absolutely brilliant. And the thing is there a snobbery about commercials or not? I don't know. I don't know that world. Or, you know, I know.
Is there a snobbery about commercials? I don't really want to do them anymore, to be honest. I haven't done one for a while. I've become a victim of my own success, to be honest.
Mm.
I remember I was watching, I was on three adverts on one break once. And I think like casting directors and that, I'll see that. But I'd like to. Yeah, I want to concentrate more on the TV and film now, which I haven't mastered yet. I haven't mastered how, like I did with the commercials, you know. But
something
with the commercials,
me you will. Something tells
me. Even like even getting that email last week was, which you know, wasn't nice to hear, but it was constructive. But you know, I'll take from that. I'll take from that, and I'll find a way. You know.
Yeah, and you've written a short film. Are you doing more writing now?
Yeah. Well, I did a short film called Just, but we done a. Well, I'll go into that. It's like we're acting, right? So, as I'm saying, commercials, I know you're saying about the snobbery thing, because you don't get credit for that.
No.
You know, if I had like, I've got like 22 credits on IMDb, but if I had the commercials that are on there, I'd have 54 or something like that, you know, and it'd be like, wow, this is impressive. So, it doesn't really go for you. You get more thingy for TV and film, but it's like, but I've been for loads of castings and stuff and films, and I've had so many near misses. Like this one the other week was a real near miss for a new big comedy. So what I did decide to do, I spoke to a few people, and I was like, well, I always thought if I crack on, I'll eventually get that break. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I've been doing it 15 years now, and I'm not getting any younger. And I thought, well, I could go another 15 years without getting a break. Or I could go 30 years without getting a break. So I thought, what do I do? And I thought, well, I need to be the captain of my own destiny, you know what I mean? I need to create my own work for me. So I thought, I know what I'll do. I'll start writing, I'll start doing this. So I wrote a short film called Just, which is not a comedy at all. It's about the Catholic Church and guilt, and you talk about abortion, we talk about da-da-da, and loads of key things. So I wrote that, and I thought, I'll go to BFI, I'll get funding, make a brilliant short film, win awards, get funding for a film, and then I'll become a superstar off my own back. And but COVID come, and we did make a crap version of it that we were going to put as part of our application. And as I say, COVID come, and then I started to put wigs on in the house. Instead, you know, so I went from being really sad to doing comedy, but it was all part of creating my own success. That was all part of that.
Absolutely. And I think perhaps, I know COVID was horrendous for so many people, but it was also a bit of a gift for others as well, especially I think creatives, once they got over that, what the hell are we going to do? And I think I know I've spoken to quite a few actors who then, once they got over that, we all got over that shock, they had the space to create. And I think that's what I got from you. And when I look at you leapt on that though immediately. I looked at the date of your first one and we'd literally just gone into lockdown and you just leapt on it.
Yeah, I did, didn't I? I did. Well, I'll tell you something as well. I don't know if people can take anything from this. So it's like, you know, I had the barbers for years and even though it was a challenge for me and, you know, but it was a challenge, and with challenges become stress and anxiety. And so when the world stood still with COVID, I didn't, all them things that were barking at me or whatever, they had gone away for a while. So I went to a default mode, and that was being creative. Mm. Now, when I was about six, I remember drawing this, and I remember this, and I hope people can take something from it. I remember drawing this picture with these four characters on. They were aliens on a spaceship, and they had TVs for bellies and blah, blah, blah. And I created this concept for a TV show. And I said to my mum, I put it in a bag before I started school, and went, Mum, take that to TV people. Yeah. I want it made into a program. And she goes to me, yes, and blah, blah, blah. But in my head, I'm like, oh, this is an idea for a television program. And then I come out of school, and the first thing I does, I went into a bag and I went, you never took it. You never took it. Anyway, I was thinking like that at the age of six. Mm. And then you become like, you just conform.
Yeah.
To like, oh yeah, I'll be this, I'll be that. Because I was meant to be a builder. So I went to try and be a builder and I was a failure. And then I got into being creative, being a barber and an actor, blah, 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 blah. But now, when's lockdown come? I went straight back to that six-year-old and done what he'd done. I created a little universe. I created characters. I created storytelling. And I went back to that because all the crap had gone. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Did you say that? There's a term, is it individuation or something like that? As you get older, you start conforming a lot less if you follow your gut. Do you know what I mean? Because as when you're young, you tend to conform with what society expects of you, don't you? Or you fall into these... You know, like you talked about your customers, they all fall into these particular boxes. And then what I'm hearing from you, and it's very relatable to me, is that I've done loads of different things, but I've come full circle. I loved the radio. I grew up with the radio, listening to the radio. I wanted to be on Radio City as a presenter as a kid. And again, yeah. I sort of disappeared. I remember applying for competitions to go round a tour and stuff like that, never won and all that. But now I'm doing podcasting. Now I'm talking to people one-to-one.
There we go.
Do you know, there it's mad, isn't it? I do think but it came out of lockdown. It came out of that pause we all just had a minute to connect with actually, if we were lucky enough to have that break, to connect with actually who we are. But then the key is to then act on it, isn't it?
Look, I think it's very important that you're true to who you are.
Mm.
And I think acting taught me that. What I said then about no one's better at being you than you. But we act in a way that we unconsciously have this blueprint that we act in a certain way for whatever reason. And I'm an advocate for therapy because that's about being transparent, about being vulnerable. And it's only then you can learn who you are. And once you've got these flaws, you can take them away. And that's what I really believe life is about. Otherwise, it's an act. You just, people have got this belief that You are. No, yeah, well, people have got this belief, if they get this, it'll make them happy. If they get this car, it'll make them happy. If they get this woman. And it might for that little moment, but that image, that fairy tale doesn't exist. Do you know what I mean? And is this making sense? It's just about being true to yourself.
Yeah.
And knowing what's important and knowing what truly makes you happy. And I think that's enjoying what you're doing with the people you enjoy being with. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, yeah. I don't want to buy this all day.
Me too, actually. I was like that. Oh God, where do we get? And there's so many things that you said there that I'm like nodding away. And I just wish I'd learned those lessons years ago. Well, we can give people those lessons. But you've got to go through the stuff to learn it though, haven't you?
But people won't. People won't. They don't. Yeah. They live in ignorance and they'll buy the newer car because it'll make them feel better in that moment. And they're only going to want the new one. Do you know what I mean? And it's like, and that sounds whatever, but that's not how I choose to live my life. I want to know who I am. I'll start talking about Buddhism in a minute, but it's like, but that is what, that's what Buddhism's about as well. It's
Did you find when you were doing the walk, obviously I know you had a few weeks on your own before Tim joined you. So just split that into two for me. In those times when you were on your own, was this the kind of stuff that was going through your head?
I know I just said, oh, I walk Land's End to John O'Groats, but there's more to that. It's like, I was at a point in my life where I thought, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? And I can go deeper again, but I don't know whether you want this type of thing. But, you know, I kept making the same mistakes over and over again, and they weren't making me happy. And I thought, right, okay, done loads of work on myself. And I thought, right, this walk's going to be a grand reset. This is to process everything I've learned and to now build my life on a solid foundation type of thing. And being on my own, I loved it. I enjoy being on my own. I'm my best company. My head's great. There's loads going on.
I love that. And again, it's something that I want to evangelize to the younger generation, that it's okay. And to come off your phone, have a minute and just connect with actually your own thoughts and who you are, because you'll find that you're all right. It's nothing to be afraid of.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It's like, I don't know if you're watching my videos on YouTube, but I'm very vulnerable on them. I'm very transparent and I'm very honest. And I'm proud that I can be that way.
Yeah,
because I question everything. I question my behaviour. I question why. Because all them behaviours are based on, your choices are based on things in your life or things that what you're built up of. Do you know what I mean? If you make good choices, let's run with that. If you make bad choices, ask yourself the question why. And that's what I like to do. I always like to ask why.
Yeah, me too. Again,
am I making sense, or am I chatting?
I'm like nodding away. You're making me feel like I'm talking to myself a little bit.
Okay, good.
Absolutely, and that, what I love. And then you talked about, you know, the importance of therapy. Again, that was an outcome of lockdown for me, because I had that moment, that time to pause and go, what the hell am I doing? You know, what's going on? What, how the hell did I get here? Great, great position though I was in, from, like you talked about, from an outside perspective. You know, I've got a lovely home, got a beautiful new husband. We married in 2019, just before lockdown, but there was still something in me. I was like, what's wrong with me? What is it? What haven't I dealt with? And I did that. I tried to deal with it myself. And then I did actually get a recommendation to actually have a counsellor. And you sort of think it's for other people, don't you? But honestly, I still to this day, I've got an appointment tomorrow. The gaps have got longer, but it's the best thing I ever did. And
there's a stigma with it, isn't it? Because if you go to therapy, there therefore must be something wrong with you.
Yes.
But there's not. It's like, it's guidance. So, you know, you'll go to someone, you'll go to your mate about relationship advice, and they've got the worst relationship ever, and they're giving you advice. They're not equipped. So I think it's important to go to a professional to get that proper guidance, you know, and or like I'm quite knowledgeable about this stuff, or I'm quite, you know, I'm emotionally intelligent. And then when someone will go to me, will you help me? And I'll go, no. Because I'm not a counsellor, I'm not qualified. Do you know what I mean? It's like, so I won't even help people in that respect. It's just, but I would point them in the right direction. But my point is, there's a stigma with it, but it's guidance. So if people go to the gym, they're not, there's nothing wrong with them, you know, but they're investing in their body. But if they go and invest in their mind, do you get criticised for that? And because I'm so open and transparent, people think there's something wrong with me. But most people, because I'm open about it, but most people keep it to themselves and they're all right. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but what I love is that you're using that platform. You're using the platform. I mean, because I know your followers have gone through the roof, haven't they, since that you created these fabulous characters. But what you're now doing is you've got that platform to share these messages.
Yeah.
And I think that's really powerful, John, and fair play to you and all credit to you, you know, for doing it. And again, the reason, that's one of the reasons I created the podcast as well. It came out of lockdown. There was no business attached to it. What I realized by going to therapy was the power of talking and opening up. But you're right about talking to the right people.
I'm not out to save anyone or anything like that. I'm just being me. But with the videos I do on YouTube, there's quite a lot of people that have come up to me and shook my hands and went, you don't know me, but I watch your videos and you might have actually saved my life. And I've went, oh, nice one. And he went, no, seriously, like, you have. And I've been like, oh, nice one, mate, blah, blah, blah. And that's great, but I haven't gone out to do that. And I don't want glorifying for that. And I don't want to take no credit for that. But that's just me being me. But it just backs up what you've just said, Dennis. Like, people can take from that. And that's great. That's good. Yeah.
When sometimes you have these like moments of like, oh, what the hell am I doing? Self-doubt creeps in. And then I just go. And again, through my counsel, he's like, minimize it. Don't make it bigger than you.
Catastrophize it. Yeah.
Exactly. And, you know, and I just say, if I've helped and I've had similar conversations with strangers and often young people, interestingly, even though I tend to think it's mainly older people that listen, if I just hit one person and make a little difference to how they think and what the, you know,
just be you, and just if you want to express it, but it's one of them, it's no one's your responsibility.
No. One of the little things I did want to touch on, and again, it was really relatable to me, and I don't know if you're happy to go there, was just how, you know, you lost your mum, and I lost my mum. I wasn't as young as you. I think you were in your 20s. I was, mine was about 8 years ago. I did the whole distraction tactic, you know, in denial. And
but you don't realise it at the time, do you?
No, you don't. And again, through my, you know, years of just, you know, I did the same thing. I sort of carried on working. I had this big delegation coming to Liverpool and we were trying to win some project at the arena, whatever. And I was like, no, I just need to get this done. You know, I was like, what?
Yeah.
You
know, but the message you'll get from people around you as well, and this is why therapy is important, because the message you'll get people who aren't equipped to give you the right direction will say, chin up, be okay, chin up. Be strong. No, you've got to feel the pain. Otherwise, it's going to come and bite you in the bum. You know what I mean? So this is, again, about therapy and the proper guidance, because the message I was given was to chin up. I thought the wrong thing to do was to feel the pain. Yeah. And that was absolutely the right thing to do. And it took me 13 years of pain and distraction. And I mean, life becomes destructive. Anyway, sorry, go
off. Yeah, well, you put a lovely reason, because you put a lovely photograph on of you and your mum this morning or yesterday.
Yeah.
I saw it and I was like, it just reminded me to, you know, the importance of the impact that, well, I guess she's had a big impact on your life before and after, actually, and is still having that impact. And that's the same with my mum, and it's the power of them, isn't it? And again, through my therapist, he's like, you know, you can talk them alive, it's fine. Don't feel like you can't. You know, and that's sort of everybody's different, but my sort of way of dealing with it is I literally talk to her all the time in my head, and I can hear we have these conversations, and it's interesting when I want some advice or everything, I can actually hear what she's saying to me. It's really bizarre, but that's
they come and visit. Do you get that? They come and visit you in the Greens. Have a little day pass.
Yeah, and I go, there's she, or little butterfly, a little white butterfly. We've got me little signs. I've got little, you know, everybody, you know, my close family know what they are. And I go, oh, you know, and it's amazing when they pop up. But again, I think it's just, I've learned to accept that now. And that's my, you know, whereas before I just avoided it and distracted myself to death and nearly, you know, did myself into the point of burnout because I was just like avoiding the whole thing. You know, and again, it's a great message for people to just have a minute, you know, the world isn't going to end if you just pause, you know. And
you've got to give yourself permission to have grieved as well. I think sometimes someone might die and they feel guilty that they're not grieving all the time, but it's okay.
There's no rules, is there? There's no rules to grief. So when you were on that walk, just coming back, you know, I love the fact that you love being in your own head and having that time to yourself. And I'm guessing then when obviously you had the incredible, beautiful moment when Tim joins you.
Yeah.
And it just changed the whole dynamic, didn't it? It was like you were meant to do that walk. As an observer looking in, it was a real wow.
It all turned out exactly the way it was meant to. It's not what I expected to happen, but it was mad. Yeah, because he only come with me for 2 days, and at this point, like, people asked to join me and stuff, and I was like, join me in Scotland, because I didn't want to be on my own. And then Tim come along. I was at a point now where I thought, right, I wouldn't mind some company. So Tim come with me for 2 days. And went, yeah, come down. And obviously, we'd spoken, obviously, with what happened in his life at that time and stuff. And he come along. And we, for someone who likes to be on their own, and I think Tim's someone who likes to be on his own as well, we got on really well. And, you know, a couple of days turned into a week, and then a week turned into 2.5 months. That's what happened.
And what a friendship. But you can tell from the dynamic that you're very similar characters. And probably that's why it worked in a way, because you knew, I'm guessing, you knew when to be quiet and you knew when to have a laugh. That's what I saw from watching the vlogs.
I'll tell you the absolute truth. It's so Tim come along, and then when we were in Liverpool, obviously we were walking into Liverpool and all these people come to see us and walked with us. I seen a news report of Tim. Jane from the BBC sent us this report he'd done on us and stuff like that. And it was about a grieving dad. Mm-hmm. And I watched it and I was lying there in bed because we'd stay in a hotel and witness as we walked into Liverpool. We walked into witness and then carried on. And then I was watching it. I thought, wow, what a massive responsibility I've got. And that gave me anxiety.
Okay.
And I went, no. I didn't see a grieving father. I saw Tim. Everyone else seen a grieving father. And I was always open and honest with Tim. And I went, this is how I felt last night, Tim. I said, but I'm not going to treat you like the grieving father. I'm going to treat you like Tim. Because there's a reason why Tim went on a walk. It's because he didn't want to be treated in this way. He wanted just headspace and stuff. So I weren't going to all over him, because it was never going to work that way.
No. And it comes full circle to what you were saying before about grieving. Everyone does it in their own way. And you gave him exactly what he needed. It's like the stars aligned. You know, again, you get goosebumps and things like this. But I did many a time. And I did have a good cry. And Jane, is it McGubbin, I think her name?
Yeah, yeah.
She did a gorgeous job at the end there as well, you know.
Yeah, she's amazing, Jane.
I do encourage any listeners and anyone who's watching to have a little look at, you know, that even just the short extract of the story, because it's the friendship that comes out of it, as like you say, as well as the incredibly sad background story to where Tim is currently in his life. The friendship is just gorgeous.
That's it. We're going to be mates for life, no matter what. We're there for each other. Obviously, he's going through a lot right now, and I send him messages of support every day, and we speak and whatever else. And yeah, we have definitely forged a very deep rooted connection. Absolutely.
Yeah, and as I said, the epitome of talk on to walk on, in terms of, you know, that power of just having a minute talking to each other, being in your own space, respecting each other's space. It's something that I would say encourage everybody to have a little look at and take some of the lessons and apply them to our own life, I think.
Oh, we had our moments, don't get me wrong, where we done each other's head. It's like there'll be some days where...
I love the Mickey takes, I have to say, where you...
Oh, poor Brian.
Put him in his pyjamas. But Brian did get the brunt of it, bless him.
Brian loved it. Like, we'd be filled, we'd do it in the morning. Like, we'd done it once or twice as a joke, and then we'd get out the van in the morning to... where we've been dropped off, and then Brian would be like, he's not going to give me any abuse today. And we were like, why do you want it? And he'd be like, oh, yeah, it was. It's like, okay. Do you know what I mean?
I know.
Oh, here he is.
I've brought Patrick in here, and the reason I brought him in, because he kept showing me, oh, look, this poor Brian. Look what they're saying to him now, poor Brian. You've got the Brian fan club here.
Yeah. I won't spoil it for listeners who haven't seen it, but yeah, I won't talk about Bambi and the animals and the signs. And
I know what bit you're referring to.
Absolutely, yeah.
He was a glutton for punishment, Brian. He loved every minute of it. He did.
Yeah,
it wasn't all like that.
Again, you know, and there's a little, I did have a little stalk of all the little of the Instagrams, and it just meant so much to him, didn't it? Again, somebody else who's perhaps, you know, perhaps
Brian
certainly hasn't been forgotten about, but he wasn't, you know, the forefront. But it was like he was the backup, wasn't he, as well? You know, and you can tell that it meant so much to him as well being there. So you've had a big impact, John.
Absolutely, Brian come from the goodness of his heart. He never got paid for it. He was volunteered to do it. But you've got to remember, there's three men there. Who have come together, and I don't fully understand what connected us and what the connection is, but we found ourselves in a part of our life in this situation, and we were all there for a reason, and I can't fully put my finger on it yet, and it'll come. But yeah, it's, and Brian was on his own journey as well. Brian's disabled, so Brian couldn't walk it, but he's still done Land's End to Johnny Groves, Brian.
Yeah, that is his.
I thought that it was clearly a lot more than clever editing that managed to get that sort of dynamic between the three of you brilliantly. You know, even between the two of you, between you and Tim,
yeah,
getting the moments of silence, getting those moments where you know, he was maybe 10, 15, 20 meters behind you when you were talking. You know, those those little points. Yeah, really, really sort of sank into, well, certainly to me, and I'm sure most of the people who are watching.
Really, Patrick, did you enjoy watching them? Yeah,
I did. Yeah, absolutely. Now, listen, I can't pretend I watched every single one.
Oh, there's like 60 of them now. Yeah.
But there were, I know from the comments, there were a lot of people who watched every single one.
And yeah, you had regular people who were tuning in for them as well. And some days I forget, but there was just days when I wanted to walk and I couldn't be bothered doing the videos and stuff like that. But sure enough, you'd be getting messages, where's the Facebook?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. And I loved it, the moment. There was a moment you're in the middle of nowhere and just somebody appeared with a cake and an iron brew. And you
that
were
was
like,
brilliant.
Literally. And the joy, and again, that power of human connection was just like came bouncing.
That was amazing. Where was we? We were in the middle of nowhere. Tim liked to walk on paths. I like to walk on roads because I always like to move forward. Tim was just like to dawdle. But I'd never liked it. So anyway, on this day, we went on a path. So we went like a mile and a half off the roads. We were in a thingy. And we just did, that. And I'm like, who's that? He's like, John, Tim. And I'm like, who's this? And I've just seen this fella running with this little bag and two iron brew. And I'm like, he said, we've seen you up the way. And we recognised you off the BBC and stuff like that. And we went to the bakery, we got you some stuff, and we wanted to come and give you it. And I was like, wow. You know, he actually ran after us, like, and it was just amazing. He wants to just come and say hello and give us a little treat. And it's just, isn't that amazing? It's lovely.
Yeah. Was that lovely. That was a little highlight for me. Go on, Patrick.
And one other thing, yeah, most people, a lot of people, when they talk about Land's End to John O'Groats, they think of doing it on a bike. There are lots of charity bike rides and that sort of thing. And actually walking it is like a totally different thing, isn't it? In terms of the distance. Did that ever, at the start, did the physical aspect of what was lying ahead of you, that it was over 1,000 miles walking, did that ever overwhelm you, or did you think about the physical side?
The physical side of it. Well, I did train beforehand. Well, I don't like 2 months of prepping for it, but there always was a worry in my mind that I might get injured, that I might get into this walk and I'm not going to be able to do it physically. You know, there was always a worry. Mentally, I knew I could do it, but I was scared whether my body would hold up. Now, the first 2 weeks I got really tight, so I wanted regular, and I got a few massages in the first couple of weeks, and then my body just got used to it. And I was absolutely fine. It was the mental side which was the hard bit, but physically, you just got used to it. And I lost weight at first, and then I started to put weight on, and because I was just regulating, just everything just sort of, and we were just eating a lot of crap out of boredom, to be honest with you as well. But physically, no, you'd seize up in the night a bit, and then when you wake up in the morning, you were good to go. The first couple of miles would be a bit dodgy, but then you'd loosen up and you'd be fine. Mm.
I love the bit you were saying earlier on where about the fact that everybody accepts when you invest in your body because you go along to your gym and get fit. But when it's a question of investing in your mind, then everybody thinks that, you know, something's wrong with you and you need therapists and so on. Michelle and I, clearly, John, we're a few years older than you.
I was an old man. I might look older. Do it the moment. Sorry, Patrick, go on.
And I'm squinting as well. Michelle and I are fascinated by sort of the mindset of people in midlife. And again, slightly changing the subject, but picking up on something you were saying earlier, that, or in fact, I read about as well in the very extensive research we've got. Well, Michelle did.
Michelle put the groundwork, and I'm very impressed, Michelle.
All the groundwork. But I remember you talking about that you got to a stage of your life where the fire in your belly went out.
Yeah.
And you were looking for that next big thing. And I guess that picks up on your sort of your hyper-focus and ADHD bit.
Well,
ADHD, I think a lot of people who get into midlife, whether that's defined in your 40s, certainly in your 50s, is you get to a stage where you're trying to find that meaning of life, or you know what your true purpose is, and that's why people talk about midlife crisis. But I think it's just a natural thing that the people go through. Do you agree? I mean, that's clearly what you went through.
Well, yeah, absolutely. But as I said to Michelle, then it's when I was six. This is the thing that I found myself wanting to do that I love. I knew this at six, you know, and then I had to go through all the crap to realize it again. And I think that's what happens with people's midlife crisis. They just live this life like, oh, how many people become an accountant because it sounds good? You know, you don't want to be an accountant. Like I spoke to a kid yesterday. She wants to work in media. And I said, what's your hobby? She went climbing. And I went, well, wouldn't you like to do climbing? She went, no, well, that's a hobby. And I went, it doesn't work like that. No. I said, why don't you make climbing your job and then your job's your hobby and you're doing what you enjoy every day? And she was like,
oh,
do you know what I mean? And it's like, it took me all them years to realize that.
I should have either become a fisherman, a windsurfer, or a pilot.
How's that work out? I bet you'd end up doing one of them. When you retire, you'll end up doing one of them. Yeah. If you're not already retired.
You can fly a plane, though, believe it or not.
You
tell me that. Everyone tells me he's James Bond. They think he's MI5, but there you go.
Do you fly a plane, Patrick?
No, I used to.
Cool.
Fly a plane, but I haven't flown a plane for decades. So.
Oh, wow.
You have done it.
But I'm those guys who secretly, you know, when you're on a plane and they say, is there a doctor on board?
And
you know, can you come up to the cockpit, please?
I'm dying for that shout out one day, aren't you? Cool am I? It's like turning up at a hotel reception as a piano and you go, oh, give us a go. And then, boom, 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 you're one of them. I'd achieved most of the goals I thought these will make me happy, and then they just never. So I went for the grand reset, got rid of everything, and started again. And right now, I've met a lovely girl. I've just started a new business that is what I truly want to do, and I have found. I think I'm on the cusp of finding a balance that I've never ever had, and it's exciting.
And that's brilliant. And you know, earlier on, you were talking about encouraging others to sort of break the thought that they have to continue to conform, have to stay doing the same thing. Where you get the opportunity, I guess you know, you're saying to people, grasp it, you know. Take it and go for it. Yeah, follow your passions.
Yeah.
As they pop into your brain.
Or absolutely back yourself into a corner where you've got no option. I think that's what I done with the walk. I got rid of my shop, got rid of my home, went on the walk, come back to nothing. So in a 2 months, I have absolutely moved mountains. And it's a case of having to. But I didn't have to when I had the barbers because I had a regular income, but I was miserable.
But it sounds like you've made space for good stuff to come in. And then again, you know, the less you have, the more that tends to, the more good that tends to happen, I find, in terms of energy and just, yeah. I keep using the phrase, have a minute, pausing and, you know, having a clear out, that minimalist, you know. And I think we sort of, I mean, you know, my daughter often goes, you haven't got many mates, Mum. Like, I know loads of people, but they're actually getting less as I get older. But I prefer it that way.
No, but you're changing, evolving, aren't you? So, you know, you're not a resource to these people anymore. So you'll probably find that these people will drop as you get older and wiser. I mean, the method I used to get in to find the balance in life probably was a bit extreme. But that was unfortunately the way I found it.
Yeah. So let's talk about you next, John. So you talk about what you're doing. Is it the production company that you were referring to then in terms of the business?
Yeah, I've started a production company called Progress Pictures.
Yeah.
We've started a project and we've just secured funding for it. Nice. So I've done it with my best friend, Owen. He's the guy I've always done all my work with. You know, creatively. We met in college 15 years ago. Even though I had the barbers, I decided to go to college and do film production. And then my acting started to work out, so I had to leave. But anyway, I met this guy, Owen, and I've always shouted Owen to give me a hand with these videos and stuff. And it's just developed from there. So I've took it from a hobby to being my full-time job now. And I'm working with my best friend, doing what I enjoy. Absolutely. It's fantastic.
So you're evidencing what you're telling other people to do. And that's the key, isn't it? And that's the power of you and what you're saying, and you using your platform for that. And then there's an acting school, is that right?
We have an acting class called Just Act. Yeah. So they're making a short film at the moment. And I de-started that while I was on the walk, and you haven't finished it yet. So I haven't returned because I haven't returned to the class yet, but it's still my class. But I'm not interfering with it. So when they finished it, we get back going again and we'll be recruiting new people. So yeah, Just Act. So if you want to go on justact.co.uk and sign up.
Yeah, and I guess you helping them navigate those pitfalls and hurdles and all the stuff that you didn't know when you went in, when you started.
Absolutely. It's about learning how to be you and teaching people to be vulnerable and, you know, letting themselves expose who they are. And that's easier said than done.
Mm.
Like, I was working for someone called Act for TV. I'll tell you the story. And there was a guy called Simon. I'm not a qualified actor. I'm a chancer. Absolutely. And there was this guy called Simon who came to audition for the school. And he was traveling from Wales to Liverpool, so it was a bit of a drive. I think the classes were £20 a session. This is when I was working for someone else as an acting tutor. And this guy comes in, Simon, and he's like, yes, I have a degree in I have a good degree in performing arts, I have a degree in like that. And I'm like, okay, like that. So he walks out, great audition, Simon, nice one. And then I said to the guy who ran the school, Michael Jackson, a casting director, I said, what am I meant to teach him? And he went, knock it out of him. And I was like, so I was always intimidated by Simon because I thought Simon's going to fire me out. Simon's going to know I'm just a chancer here. Anyway, blah, blah, blah. And I always been intimidated by Simon. And then anyway, about 8 months, I left the school and Simon phoned me and went, hi, John, I believe you're not returning to the school. I went, no. And he went, well, I just want to inform you, I won't be returning either. And I went, why is that, Simon? He said, I went for an audition today, John, for Coronation Street. And I went, oh, yeah. And he said, I've been an actor for years and I've got no work, John. And he went, I got the job. And he went, I got the job because of you. And I went, why is that? He went, because I walked in and I told him, I'd just been paid my shed. I told him about my cat. I told him about this. I was just me, John, and I got the job. So thank you. Like that, I thought, wow, do you know what I mean? Yeah. So that's what I teach in my class. I just teach people to embrace who they are.
Yeah, absolutely love that. Patrick, did you want to come in on any of that?
just to say, you know, the Michelle and I have spoken to other actors who talk about acting school and actors being great for young people in terms of instilling things like confidence in them, getting them used to public talking, you know, public speaking. And you know, we talk about the power of conversation in society nowadays, where a lot of the conversation is digital, isn't it? It's on Snapchat or it's on WhatsApp or whatever. But actually getting young people to have the confidence to speak out and speak up and so on is a sort of a skill that seems to be lost. Are you managing to get younger people who are coming to the acting classes?
I think the youngest we've got, 18, a lad called Lloyd, and he's come on leaps and bounds. I think his confidence has most certainly his confidence has gone up, definitely. But it is that thing. It's allowing yourself to be you, isn't it? You know, it's if you're transparent and you're honest, you've got nothing to hide, and with that comes confidence. So yeah, I do think acting most certainly does help kids.
Yeah, I mean, I think my daughter gets to mention most of these podcasts. She did loads of acting when she was young. She was dead shy, but she did like tons and tons of acting. She didn't keep it up because she just, you know, I think she did that whole 14, 15-year-old thing. But I can still see, I always say this, she's got this steely inner confidence having performed.
Yeah.
Nothing really intimidates it, like interviews and stuff like that. I remember I was talking to Ethna Brown about it because she was my guest a couple of weeks ago. She's absolutely phenomenal actor and has got an incredible story. But she does confidence classes as well. Might be worth you teaming.
All right, okay.
Might be worth you teaming up with Ethna, actually.
Yeah. Definitely, I'll give it a little message.
Yeah, and we were talking about, you know, that power of getting just kids to, you know, to communicate, look you in the eye, be, you know, believe in yourself.
My daughter, my eldest daughter, Emily, like she was a little carbon copy of me. We used to sing in the car. She was confident, da-da-da-da-da. And then lockdown come, and she saw everyone was online then. She was chatting online. And I'm telling you now, when she went back to school, she struggled to communicate with her group of friends. And she lost the confidence. And she's gone to a new school. And now she's found groups of friends. And now she's flying. And she phoned me about a week ago. And I nearly started crying on the phone. Because I could hear the confidence in her voice again.
Yeah.
The Emily, that little girl, who you know what I mean? She was back, you know, but it was just amazing how lockdown, not being able to socialise, completely took her confidence away. And thankfully, it's come back. Yeah. But yeah.
And I'm sure you played a major part in that, John, because
I tried, but I never.
What a dad. I mean, you are like a cool. They must. Are they at that age where they think you're cool, or are they at that age where they're like, nah, dad, you know?
It's just embarrassing. It's just embarrassing. It's like, I don't know if they're secretly it's where teachers will approach the kids in school and go, oh, are we? Your dad, your mate? And they're like, yeah. And then you come home and tell me. I think they're secretly proud, but.
Yeah.
I'm just embarrassing. Just a joke.
What's next for you? You know, you're doing your, you know, in terms of these lovable characters, is there a show coming up or anything like that? Or are they still online? Are they still popping up?
I haven't done nothing for a while. With the walk, I just haven't prepped. So, and what I usually do, I'll get an idea and I'll just execute it. Yeah. And that's how I like to do it. I don't like to do it all the time. Yeah. Otherwise, you just become, you know what I mean? Yeah. Or putting crap up for the sake of putting it up. I'd rather get a good idea and just execute it. I have got a big idea for Turkey Teeth.
Yeah.
It's brewing. And it's in a different form. It's not something for online. And it's not a stand-up show. I'm hoping this comes off because it'll be great.
Yeah, and the thing what I'm seeing is that there's layers to these characters, and you want to show a few more layers to them rather than just, you know, the surface have a laugh type of thing.
Well, I done a thing with Frankie Allen the other week, and he's managed by his son Will, And do you want to just do a quick video with Turkey and Frankie Allen just to promote a show we done last week? And so it's just, we'll just film it on the phone, John. But I like to do film it properly, you know what I mean? And I went, right, okay. So I went round to the house and I went, so okay, so I said, so Turkey's, you know, he's a showboater, so there's a reason why he's a showboater. It's because he's got low self-esteem, so he's compensating for that by being a da-da-da. So obviously he's got an abusive father, which is Frankie, and they're sitting there like this. Just do the video, John. And I'm like, no, there's layers, and blah, blah, blah. But then when people watched it, people were like, oh, poor Turkey.
Yeah.
So I showed his vulnerability, but that vulnerability comes from his dad. But that explains, do you know what I mean? So there is a lot of depth to these characters, yeah. Humanize them.
Yeah. And you're also, like, going back to you want to get that message out about being yourself and there's layers and how to be in life. That is actually creeping into these characters because people, the young lads especially and young people are watching it and taking them in and you in. And it's really powerful, Latch On, I have to say.
Yeah, there is messages. Like, I've done Kenny's Christmas Carol. I don't know if you watched that one, but, you know, Kenny's just this character who's just... He's loud, he's just very small-minded and shallow. And so over the Christmas Carol, and he gets visited by the ghost, which is all different celebrities, it reveals why he's the way he is.
Yeah.
And, like, there's people who... There's one scene with his father when he goes back to the past, and his father's an abusive father, and it's this little boy. Mm-hmm. And you think... And people relate to that, and then people go, that's me. And so many people mess with me going, wow, John. You know, but here's me making a comedy. But there is still a message. And then I done Civil War with Craig and Turkey. And that was about bullying. And that was about standing up for who you are. And there was loads of layers to Civil War, most certainly. But then people attach themselves to the characters. Then they get emotionally attached to them. They're not just cliches anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what I love about it. And that's, you know, you know, in these days of, in particular, men's mental health and men, you know, young lads to open up and believe in themselves and talk to each other and all those messages that you're given are, as I say, really powerful and full credit to you because there's a message behind the laughter. And laughter is a great medicine, obviously, as well, as a, you know, surface level, let's all have a laugh. And it binds people together because I can, you know, I know that we have my daughter's nearly 21 now and I hear young friends love having them in the house. But what I'm finding is they're actually becoming much more open, I think.
Yeah.
And I think it might be through the likes of yourself. I'm guessing that, you know, the likes of yourself that they're watching, you know.
Well, look, right, I was driving through Liverpool last week and there was kids. You'd see people, like, and not everyone's dressed the same anymore. There's so many different groups. There's so many different... groups, as I say, so people are finding their people, so people are actually tuning in and find because the internet, whatever, and they're finding they are being truer to themselves, I'd say, because they're mixing with groups of people who are more like them, so it people are being truer to themselves, I suppose. Yeah.
So in terms of any, you know, you're acting, are you still going for auditions then? You're not
yeah, absolutely, yeah, yeah. I went up for a kids TV program the other day. Oh my god, I'm like a proper, hey, kids. Yeah, I felt like so silly. Yeah, I'm still going up for them, yeah. Now that I'm back, I'll be my agent sending more through. So, yeah, hopefully I'll start getting some.
I guess, and it's taking you a little while. I've got the feeling it's taking you a little while to readjust.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and I've expressed this to everyone. It's like... I've just been dropped back in this world of... What's the way to describe it? Now playing a game you never ever chose to play. Do you know what I mean? So I've been walking the country and all I had was a stick, a coat, and a bag with bits in. And now I've got to have a car again. I've got to have a home. I've got to have this. I've got to have that. So you've got to jump back on that. I know that might sound mad to you, but you start to form habits and. I've spent 3.5 months without any of these things. So coming back has been quite daunting. So I know what it's like when people maybe get out of jail or come out the army. It's a similar thing. So, you know, it has took a bit of adjusting. But I tell you what, on that walk, there's so much to take from it. Like, my eyes are so much wider. I've learned so many lessons. I've learned how capable I am. And it's taught me a lot about, like, what I've realized is this whole country is all countryside, you know. It's like, it's all countryside. And it's all country. It's not all towns, villages, and cities. It's not a big city. The majority is countryside. And you'll go through a little village and there'll be people in the village. You've never, ever left the village. You go to towns and a town will have a drug problem and people who've never left the towns and you'll have, you know, it's a little bit bigger. But then you go to a city and people don't see beyond the city walls. All that matters is what's in that city. And you see them falling over each other. And it's like, I've stood back now and I'm like, nah, there's more to that brick wall city. So my eyes are definitely wider. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. It's really empowering. It's like it makes me want to pack my bags and go. Honestly. Yeah. Like, you know.
And but John, do you, one of the things I've found, I mean, I moved to Liverpool 7 or 8 years ago. Nearly 10 years ago. And I've lived in various cities in the world. But the thing about Liverpool as a city is that I think it's just got such a much more of a sense of community in it than other big cities. And I know we're not one of the biggest cities in the UK. There are plenty of bigger than us. But even though you distinguish between cities, do you see a difference in terms
Absolutely.
Of the closeness of Liverpool compared to the other?
I told this before. I was in Glastonbury and I lost, my phone wouldn't charge. And I went to Starbucks because I needed Brian to pick me up because Brian had picked me up and dropped me off where I left off and he picked me off the next day. Anyway, so my phone charger broke. So I went to Costa or Starbucks and I asked three people in there if they would let me use their charger to charge my phone because I was lost and walking from Land's End to John O'Groats. Can I? And the three of them said no. And then I walked, I couldn't even buy a charger because my thing was on my phone. And then I went to this shop and I said, look, mate, can you give me a charger? I'll charge your phone, I'll pay for the charger. He said, no. And I went, why won't anyone help me? And he said, what do you mean? I said, no one will help. I've asked four people to help me and no one will help. And that made me realize how amazing Liverpool is. Because I know everyone would have bent over backwards to about me. And if I was a stranger with a Southern accent, Scottish accent, they would have also helped me. So it did teach me how amazing Liverpool is. Mm-hmm. And I'm not just ripping Glastonbury, but I did see it, how different Liverpool is to everyone else in the country.
Yeah,
I love Liverpool. I'm proud to be from Liverpool. Absolutely. But I'm also realise Liverpool is like that little village that no one's ever left.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It does that as well.
Yeah. Pockets of people very much looking inward and not, and then there's all the pockets of everyone looking outwards, which is, you know, because we're on a coast.
But Liverpool as well as a river. So what happens is it bounces off the river and comes back in again. Do you know what I mean? So you get it, you get it twice.
That is true. So yeah, well, we can be like, community is great, but also we don't want to be looking too inward, do we, John? We want to be actually looking outwards. Remember your own, look after your own, but also look after yourself in the process and don't put a limitation on yourself.
My eyes are a lot wider now, and that walk taught me that. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Surround yourself with the right people.
Anyway, John, you're not going to be another 40 years. You're going to be another at least 60 years.
I'm 42. I know, if I get till 80, I'm happy.
Listen, I want to live until I'm 134.
Oh, good luck.
I'll hit the year, what is it, 2100.
Do you know what, though? I'm thinking with this, I might actually live longer.
Yeah, you will.
I'm not pushing you around.
I'll be dead rich by then as well, so you know I'll have the means to do it.
Actually, the funny thing is, you're talking about that, when I said to my son that I was going to live until I was 134, the first thing he said is, "Dad, you'll just run out of money. How are you going to live that long?" Actually, you're right. I didn't think about that.
Now we just need a stick and a little bag and some socks and undies, and you're off. You'll be fine.
Yeah, just do it. You know what? You're right. What you're saying there, though, because I'm basing that on today's standards, aren't I?
So I'm reading a book called Young Forever, which is by an American guy, and he what he tries to say is that chronological aging is inevitable. So we get every year we get a little bit older chronologically. He said biological aging is not inevitable. So if you're doing the right thing in your head, mentally and physically, you can actually, your biological age can go in reverse.
Can it?
Yeah.
There's a challenge for you.
Let's lose some weight first. When I done that bodybuilding show, I went in and got all tested off the doctor. And they said, all the years I've done this, you're the only one to hit every mark spot on. And I was there. So that was me reversing, really. Mm. Now it's just a joke.
We didn't really get into this, your body and your health and your weight. And
yeah.
You're very conscious of what's going on in your mind as well. So harnessing, and I think there are a lot of people who reach midlife and they're not self-aware enough. They're not conscious and they let their bodies go. Or I think the more people that in a nice way that can be encouraged to look after themselves, both physically and mentally.
I think
we can live a little bit longer than what.
Do you know what? I agree. I think Buddha said it or something. I've mentioned Buddha three times now. But they say we spend our whole life and whatever we've got left, we try to get our health back, don't we? And it's like, I'll be honest with you. I mean, I've had a lot of figuring out to do. And it's like, I've always built me life on a sandy land. So I'll get into shape and then it'll come plummeting down. And until I find that balance, if I'd have lost loads of weight, I'd just put it back on. But I think this time round, I finally found balance and I can maintain that health. Yeah. But I have to do all this first.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. 100%.
Don't get much more honest than that, do you? We'll do that for round two.
I'm looking at my notes here. And I had to write down executive dysfunction. I'm going to Google that later. That sounded really good, like something.
Isn't it? Do you know what that is? So executive dysfunction is, I haven't paid my credit card bill for 2 months. I've got money in the bank. I can pay it. But I cannot bring myself to do it.
To do the paperwork.
I can't do it.
Yeah.
If I get a parking fine, I can't do it. But now I'm just going to hand them to Jess and she'll do it.
But executive dysfunction,
it's not rewarding. I just can't do it. A lot of people can't get their head around that, but it's
that behavior. I recognize that. Does all the paperwork just sort of pile up somewhere?
In a bin. Yeah, that's terrible. And that's been a massive downfall for me. But now I'm surrounding myself with people like Owen, who can do things I can't. Because things come really easy to me that don't come easy to other people. But then things that come to easy people don't come easy to me. Mm. It's like ADHD. Like, do you understand how it actually works?
Do you know what? I don't, but I am actually fascinated because Patrick's nodding and smiling because the amount of times I've said to you, I actually think is... I've got it as well.
No, but it's like a lot of people don't understand how it works. So it's like, I just kept asking the question, why? So it's about dopamine. So the likes of, Patrick, yourselves, like, you might just have regular, look at me, I've got a bottle of can of Coke and I've got that. That's dopamine, right? So I'm chasing, I'm scavenging for that all the time. So it's like people with normal levels of dopamine just... So dopamine is the reward system. We know that, don't we, for survival? So it's like the receptors in your brain. I predict your guys' receptors work fine. But people who've got ADHD, the receptors, they don't work efficiently. So we're constantly scavenging dopamine. And all we want to do is be on an even keel like everyone else. So when you've got hyper-focus, whether it's play a computer game or whether it's do a bodybuilding show, every task I do will give me a regular supply of dopamine. And that's why you are constantly focused. But I'm not going to get any buzz out of paying a credit card bill. I know I haven't been diagnosed, but I've had like 3 different charities get in touch with me saying, will you please come in and get diagnosed because you have got it.
And they want you to be, they probably get you as an ambassador, which again, what a joy that would be for them because of your fabulous following. In terms of, just on that, by the way, in terms of how does that feel for you in terms of that growth in follower numbers and, is it daunting? Is it exciting? Do you get the dopamine hit from it or can it be a bit overwhelming?
Yeah, when I'd make a video and I'd upload it, I would get a buzz out of watching all the comments come in and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And that was just a buzz. Yeah, I thought it was a validation. I don't think it is. It's just you get a buzz out of it, aren't you? You're getting dopamine, aren't you?
Yeah.
I don't know. I've calmed down on a social media recently. I just got no. I want to. It's a bottomless pit.
Yeah.
It's just a bottomless pit, and it's like I don't want to just be. I want to do stuff that's credible. I want to make for TV and film. I want to do it properly.
People, yeah. Honestly, John, what an absolute pleasure to talk to you. And honestly, you're a breath of fresh air.
I knew
you would be. And thank you so much for responding so quickly. I literally just went, oh bollocks, I'm gonna message him, and I could hear the tapping of the stick as you were walking, and you voice messaged me straight back. And you know, in true Liverpool spirit, you know, you said you'd come on, and it was brilliant.
Do you realise? I know you're trying to wrap this up with a fancy conclusion, but do you realise that you used the word bollocks?
I noticed you did. Yeah. You know what? I did not swear once.
John, you've been really good.
I said crap before. Oh, I wanted to say something else. Do you know professional I am.
You definitely need to meet off her, I'm telling you.
you've ruined it for everyone, Michelle.
Terrible.
Right at the end, she ruined it. You absolutely let down.
The real me, you see, that's what he's done to me. Elf woman. Loving it. John, thank you so much. Patrick, is there anything you want to add before, you know, we wrap up with John? It's been brilliant, hasn't it?
I can't really add much more than
that. I think you've been too nice to us, John, I'll be honest.
I'm not abusive. I'm a nice guy.
I'm not abusive, but I reckon...
Were you like Brian? Did you just want abuse?
No, I reckon... I just thought you were going to take the mickey a little bit.
John's far too polite. But I was there. I was ready to take it on the chin, John.
Well, he takes
it. That's not my style.
He takes it from me every day. Bless him.
all this grey hair.
Yeah, he wasn't grey.
You've got some.
Yeah. It wasn't grey.
John, thank you for wearing your heart on your sleeve, being the transparent, wonderful, empowering. All those messages are brilliant. You know, I've got a feeling there's so much more to come from you. Now you've taken that huge step back. What a life lesson. What an experience you've had. Thank you, John. And let's hope we'll have a little drink. We'll have a proper meet-up very soon. I'd love to do that.
Definitely.
Take care.
Thanks for having me. See you later. Okay. Bye.
You're listening to the Talk On to Walk On podcast, which is just one part of our wider offer. Our mission is to remind the world that conversation should never be underestimated. But we also know that many conversations need a lot of courage and confidence. That's why Patrick and I have created Elevate Your Mindset under the Talk On to Walk On brand. If you think you, your team, or your students would enjoy working with us to walk on in life with confidence, then go to our website, talkontowalkon.com. You'll learn more about us, our coaching, mentoring, and talks offer. You can also follow Talk On to Walk On Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Finally, taking a moment to rate, review, and subscribe, or even sponsor our podcast will really help us spread our power of conversation message. Remember, the simplest act can have the largest impact. So let's connect, have a conversation, and you never know where it will lead.